This morning we continue our studies through Isaiah. I am prepared to go from Isaiah 13 all the way through Isaiah 17 today. We will see if that happens. This marks a new beginning in the book, a major division between Isaiah 12 and Isaiah 13. Isaiah is full of joy and praise. It wraps up the first part of the book in a very joyful mood. And then all of a sudden in Isaiah chapter 13, the first words we read is the burden against Babylon, which Isaiah the son of Amos saw. Now that burden can be translated as oracle or prophecy also. So we're going to have one nation after another here being judged by God. And we start off against Babylon. And in your notes this morning, chapters 13 through 27 shows international upheavals during the time of Assyrian and Babylon empires. And of course, these judgments are brought on by God, which shows that he is no mere local deity. The whole earth is the Lord's. Now all these other nations have local deities. We saw that Egypt had local deities. And God put to shame every one of those. And now we see that the earth is the Lord's, the fullness thereof, and that the Lord is judge of all the earth. Alright, this long section also shows that all nations are under God's law. He wouldn't judge them if they didn't break his law. This law wasn't authoritative. But he does judge them. And I've got in your notes that this is contrary to the teachings of some. It's contrary to the teachings of a lot. A lot of Christians say only Israel was under God's law. But God does judge them where there is no law, there's no transgressions. But these nations had all transgressed the law of God. And a lot of Christians go even further than saying these nations were not under God's law. They say we're not under God's law. And got some news for them. Jesus says not one jot or tittle of the law will fail until all these things are fulfilled. So all nations are answerable to God. God is the creator of the ends of the earth. God will judge the world in righteousness. So those two things we need to see. God is no local deity. He's Lord of all the earth, and therefore all the earth is under his law. And they're answerable to him, and he does judge them according to his law. Now we have a law laid down for us in several books in the Pentateuch, mainly Deuteronomy and Exodus. And then we don't have any law after that. We just have the prophets interpreting God's law and showing how the peoples were guilty of breaking his law. They bring so-called lawsuits against the people. The law has already been laid down. The prophets remind the people of God's law and tells them the danger they're in, because they have transgressed God's law, and God will hold them accountable and God will judge them. Okay, just a brief introduction on this. Any other comments on that? Okay, the Spirit of the Reformation Study Bible makes this comment at the beginning of chapter 13. This chapter, just to show, all the Bibles and their headings that they have, sectional headings, that I know of anyway, say that it's a burden against Babylon. And that is exactly what the first verse says in chapter 13, a burden against Babylon. I'm just going to tell you this is another view. I don't hold this view, but just so you're aware, there is another view. And that comes, and I read that in the Spirit of the Reformation Study Bible, which I think is a very good study Bible. It says in there, this chapter may be concerning Assyria. In the first 5 verses, we see God gathering. Oh, that's all I want to say. That it may be concerning Assyria. So just be aware of that. And that may be because Babylon hadn't even come on the scene yet. But I'm going to teach it as if it concerns Babylon, just like the text says. All right, somebody, we'll start over back there with Laura. I don't think Laura got to read any last week. And go through, let's see, I want us to go through verse, you got your endurance up this morning? Have you been training?
Yes, we'll see.
Okay, all right. Go through verse 16.
1-16?
Yes.
Okay.
If you get tired, let me know, and we'll let Kim take over.
Okay. Isaiah, son of Amos, received this message concerning the destruction of Babylon. Raise a signal flag on a bare hilltop. Call up an army against Babylon. Wave your hand to encourage them as they march into the palaces of the high and mighty. I, the Lord, have dedicated these soldiers for this task. Yes, I have called mighty warriors to express my anger, and they will rejoice when I am exalted. Hear the noise on the mountains. Listen to the vast armies march. It is the noise and shouting of many nations. The Lord of Heaven's armies has called this army together. They come from distant countries, from beyond the farthest horizons. They are the Lord's weapons to carry out his anger. With them he will destroy the whole land. Scream in terror, for the day of the Lord has arrived, time for the Almighty to destroy. Every arm is paralyzed with fear, every heart melts, and people are terrified. Pangs of anguish grip them, like those of a woman in labor. They look helplessly at one another, their faces aflame with fear. For see, the day of the Lord is coming, the terrible day of this fury and fierce anger. The land will be made desolate, and all the sinners destroyed with it. The heavens will be black above them, and the stars will give no light. The sun will be dark when it rises, and the moon will provide no light. I, the Lord, will punish the world for its evil, and the wicked for their sin. I will crush the arrogance of the proud and humble the pride of the mighty. I will make people scarce in gold, more rare than the fine gold of Ophir. I will shake the heavens. The earth will move from its place when the Lord of Heaven's armies displays his wrath in the day of his fierce anger. Everyone in Babylon will run about like a hunted gazelle, like sheep without a shepherd. They will try to find their own people and flee to their own land. Anyone who is captured will be cut down, run through with a sword. Their little children will be dashed to death before their eyes. Their homes will be sacked, and their wives will be raped.
Okay, it doesn't look good for Babylon. All right. In your notes there, it says in the first 5 verses, we see God's gathering a huge army for judgment on Babylon. Something here. You can scratch out the word "the." It's on Babylon. Yeah. All right, so God has gathered huge armies, and he has consecrated them. We have proud Babylon here. And they are going to be judged. So, we see in verse 6, it states that the day of the Lord is near. And verse 9 says that it's coming. That is the day of the Lord. In this case, it is God's judgment. All right. The people from Babylon, the people from Israel, who a lot of them will be taken captive. They need to realize that what is happening is not mere bad luck. It's not Mother Nature. This is a judgment from God. Everything is working out exactly the way that the Lord has purposed. And no man can restrain his hand. So the Lord's day is coming. Isaiah is telling the people it's God's judgment. And it's not mere bad luck. As we see in the second part of verse 6, it will come as destruction from the Almighty. Everything that's happening is because of God's hand. All right, I want to skip down to verse 10. In the New King James, it says, "For the stars of heaven and their constellations will not give their light." And before we finish reading that, Kim, will you look up Matthew 24, 1 through 3, and verse 29. 1 through 3 and then verse 29. All right, beginning in verse 9 of chapter 13. "Behold, the day of the Lord comes, cruel without both wrath and fierce anger, to lay the land desolate, and he will destroy its sinners from it. For the stars of heaven and their constellations will not give their light. The sun will be darkened in its going forth, and the moon will not cause its light to shine." All right, so many times, and I did this before when I was a lot younger, that seems like the end of the world. That's it for the universe, right? That's it. God's destroying everything. It's the end of the world. The sun's going to go away. The stars will not give any light, and the moon will not have any light. All right, so this is God's judgment on Babylon. I mean, you have to read the context. All right, so this is evidently figurative language because God did judge Babylon. The sun's still up there. The moon's still giving light. The stars are still giving light. This is not the only place we see this kind of cosmic language. Kim, if you'll read what I assigned to you, this is Matthew 24.
1 through 3. "And Jesus went out and departed from the temple, and his disciples came to him to show him the building of the temple. And Jesus said unto them, See ye not all these things? Verily I say unto you, there shall not be here left a stone upon a stone that shall not be cast down. And as he sat upon the Mount of Olives, his disciples came unto him apart, saying, Tell us when these things shall be, and what sign shall be of thy coming, and of the end of the world. Verse 29. And immediately after the tribulations of those days shall the sun be darkened, and the moon shall not give her light, and the stars shall fall from heaven, and the powers of heaven shall be shaken."
Okay. We see this very same language of Jesus prophesying the end of Jerusalem. And he says in verse 34 that this generation, that generation that he was talking to, will by no means pass away till all these things take place. So when you read this kind of language in the Bible, don't automatically assume it's the end of the world, the end of the cosmos, that God is destroying everything. It was used to show the end of Babylon, the destruction on Babylon. It's here used by Jesus to describe the destruction on Jerusalem and the temple. Okay. Now, Pastor, you'll look up for us Ezekiel 32. Verses 7 and 8. And when you get there, just read that to us.
Yes. "When I put out your light, I will cover the heavens and make its stars dark. I will cover the sun with a cloud, and the moon shall not give her light. And all the bright lights of the heavens I will make dark over you and bring darkness upon your land, says the Lord God."
All right, so I just wanted to show you that. This was against Pharaoh, king of England, king of Egypt. And so that language is fairly common. The people, the disciples that were listening to Jesus should have been able to know what he was talking, what it was concerning the end of them. And that's one reason I think that Jerusalem became the new Babylon, which we will get more into in just a few minutes. Okay, so in verse 10, we see what we just read, and then also in verse 13, we get similar language. Therefore, I will shake the heavens, and the earth will move out of her place, in the wrath of the Lord of hosts, and in the day of his fierce anger. So on the nation of Babylon, Isaiah prophesies these things using cosmic language like that. Like I said, it's not looking good for Babylon. All right, the remainder of the chapter goes into further details about these judgments. And you can read that on your own. It's just one thing after another. God proclaiming through Isaiah what he is going to do to Babylon. All right, a couple of things about this chapter that stands out, of course, is God's sovereignty, as I have gone in with you before. And that all happens according to his decree. Now, a lot of Christians rebel at God's total sovereignty, even over disasters, and then that everything happens, that God decrees that all these thousands of people are going to be killed. But I take comfort in the fact that what's going on, however bad it is, it's all because of God's decree. And don't be like Christians and live in fear, because it's all under God's sovereign hand. Everything happens according to his eternal decree, even disasters. If you don't believe God brings disasters, then I guess you're not reading the Bible. That's all I got to say, just not reading the Bible. All right, anybody else have anything on chapter 13?
Charles,
this language is used for the destruction of a nation and not for the end of the world.
Could you go over the first couple of lights as well?
Yeah. These chapters, 13 through 27, show international upheaval. And these are brought on by God, showing that he is no mere local deity.
Thank you.
And that all nations are under God's law. And I think I've covered the rest of it. All right, Charles, you had your hand up.
Yeah, your comment at the beginning about this is not bad luck that these things are happening. These are the judgments of God. That's sort of the way modern people think. They're taught to think that way, because implicit in that is that the one and only source of true judgment that you can be certain of as to where it comes from is the state. The state brings judgment against you for not doing this or doing that, and that is the absolute authority. And it won't tolerate any idea that there's something higher than that. I don't know about now, but you know, it used to be in insurance policies they had a clause about, well, that's an act of God. I don't know if they still use that terminology. But that's an older example where people acknowledged that the Lord was ultimately back of all this.
Another word that's misused is sovereign, like the sovereign state, sovereign federal government, even the sovereign person. There's no place sovereign except for God. Like the sovereignty of free will, right?
No, God can't interfere with that.
No, he wouldn't do that.
That's not fair.
Even violence demands free will, would he?
It's not fair. Well, those people have never read Romans chapter 9, have they?
Yeah.
Okay, anything else on chapter 13? Before we move to 14, which is a continuation on God's judgment on Babylon. And Michelle, it'll be your turn to read. And I'm going to have you read through verse 15.
Well,
so I hope you
shall see.
Okay. And if you give out, we'll have Bud pick up wherever you give out.
Okay. For the Lord will have mercy on Jacob and will still choose Israel and settle them in their own land. The strangers will be joined with them, and they will cling to the house of Jacob. Then people will take them and bring them to their place, and the house of Israel will possess them for servants and maids in the land of the Lord. They will take them captive, whose captives they were, and rule over oppressors. It shall come to pass in the day of the Lord gives you rest from your sorrow and from your fear and the hard bondage in which you are made to serve, that you will take up this proverb against the king of Babylon and say, how the oppressor has ceased, the golden city ceased. The Lord has broken the staff of the wicked, the scepter of the rulers. He who struck the people in wrath with a continual stroke, he who ruled the nations in anger, is persecuted and no one hinders. The whole earth is at rest and quiet. They break forth in singing. Indeed, the cypress trees rejoice over you and the cedars of Lebanon, saying, since you were cut down, no woodsman has come up against us. Hail from beneath is excited about you to meet you at your coming. It stirs up the dead for you, all the chief ones of the earth it has raised up from their thrones, all the kings of the nations. They all shall speak and say to you, have you also become as weak as we? Have you become like us? Your pomp is brought down to Sheol, and the sound of your string instruments. The maggot is spread under you, and worms cover you. How you have fallen from heaven, O Lucifer, son of the morning. How you are cut down to the ground, you who weaken the nations. For you have said in your heart, I will ascend into heaven. I will exalt my throne above the stars of God. I will sit on the mount of the congregation on the farthest side of the north. I will ascend above the heights of the cloud. I will be like the Most High. Yet you shall be brought down to Sheol, to the lowest depths of the pit.
Thank you. This chapter continues with Isaiah's proclaiming of God's judgment on Babylon. However, we see in the first two verses that we see good news for God's people. God's going to have mercy on them. God's going to give them dominion over the other people. This should be considered a preview, one commentator says, on chapters 40 through 66, which are very upbeat, very messianic. And this also shows the status of the Gentiles in the future. Servants and then converts. So the rest of this book will show that the Gentiles are judged, they become servants, and then converts. So good news. In the midst of all these judgments on Babylon, good news for God's people. And then in verses 3 through 23 is a prophecy of the fall of the kingdom of Babylon. Of the king of Babylon. Which would also be a kingdom of Babylon too. And the problem described here is what? What's Babylon's problem as described? They had many, but the one described here is what? Pride, good old-fashioned pride. Your pomp has brought you down to Sheol. Okay, we see in verses 4 through 5, God brings judgment on the king. We see in verses 6 through 8, the nations rejoice. And we see in verses 9 through 11, the king receiving his just reward. Verses 12 through 23 describe the further fall of the king and the nation of Babylon. Described here is their fall, is their pride. Now, we see in verse 12, how you have fallen from heaven, O Lucifer. Dana, what does the New American Standard Bible say, verse 12? How you have fallen from heaven, what?
How have you fallen from heaven, O star of the morning sun of the dawn?
All right, it's O morning star, literally. King James and New King James are the only ones I know of that put the word Lucifer in there. The ASV doesn't, the New American Standard Bible doesn't, the English Standard doesn't, and the NIV doesn't. It's either day star or morning star.
Geneva does.
Does what? Lucifer, okay. Nothing in the context, note this context. It refers to the king of Babylon. It doesn't refer to Satan. As far as I can tell, the only place where Lucifer occurs, the name Lucifer occurs in Scripture, is right here. And it's talking about the king of Babylon. So, if a person says that Lucifer is Satan, he doesn't get that strictly from the Bible. And it's no big deal, but Satan is never called Lucifer in the Bible.
It doesn't have Lucifer in the Hebrew?
No, it's day star or morning star in the Hebrew. I don't know why the King James does that.
Yeah, they took some real guts with it.
Yeah, in the margin, even in the margin of the New King James, it says literally day star.
I don't have the Latin translation on my phone, but I think that's where it comes from. In the Latin, it's the Latin term light bearer.
That would make sense. Yeah. Yeah. Now, like I said, we have two chapters here devoted to Babylon. And I started looking things up, and I was surprised at how much of Scripture actually talks about Babylon. So Babylon's important. We have it here in Isaiah chapter 14. And we'll get over to chapter 21. The subject becomes Babylon again. All of Jeremiah 50 and 51 concerns judgments on Babylon, which takes up about 6 pages in the Bible I was using. 6 pages on the judgment of Babylon in Jeremiah. And it would be 104 verses of the Bible. Now, the King James never sets out anything in poetic form, so it may only be 2 or 3 pages in the King James. But if you have a modern translation, it's probably more like 6. Okay, Bud, I think it's your turn to read. If you'll look up for us Genesis chapter 10, we are going to hear... trace a few things about Babylon. Because like I said, Scripture devotes a lot of time to it. We need to make sure we understand this. And we do know what nation took Judah into captivity, right? Everybody know that? Babylon. Babylon took Judah into captivity. All right, Bud, there's going to be several different places in chapter 10 I want you to read. But start out with just 10:10.
The beginning of this kingdom was Babel. I'm glad you give me these. I like them.
Okay, that's far enough. That's the only one that you need to read. All right, now he's talking here about Enoch. About Nimrod. You look at verse 9, like Nimrod, the mighty hunter before the Lord. And at the beginning of his kingdom was Babel. So here we see Babylon founded by Nimrod. And one thing to notice, Nimrod was a Cushite, a descendant of Ham. He was a descendant of Ham, but he was not under the curse of Canaan. You remember when Noah came out and got drunk and Ham did the terrible thing he did to his father. His son was cursed, not him. So not all Hamites are cursed, but Canaan is cursed, so... we see that Nimrod and Babylon were not under that curse. All right, now I'll read verses 7 and 8. The sons, I've got a self-pronunciation Bible here, so I'm okay. All right, the sons of Cush were Seba, Havilah, Sabta, Raama, and Sabtichah. I thought it was okay. And the sons of Raaman were Sheba and Dedan. And then it says, Cush begot Nimrod. So we see Nimrod gets kind of a verse of his own there. Even though Cush begat all those other people, the author comes back and seems to give Nimrod some special treatment there. He goes into it again. Cush begot Nimrod, and then he began to multiply, to be the mighty one on the earth. So in some way, Nimrod and Babylon seem to have a little special status there. All right, we were in Genesis 10. Now if we go over to 11:2, I think Charles, some of this was covered a few weeks ago. It came to pass as they journeyed from the east that they found a plain in the land of Shinar, and they dwelt there. And of course, what happened there was the Tower of Babel, where they were going to, just like the king of Babylon that we're reading about in Isaiah, they were trying to get up to heaven. And so God comes down and brings judgment upon them and on their pride, just like the king of Babylon. So the Babylonians built the Tower of Babel, and then God judged them. And next would be you, Mike, and 2 Kings 17:24. That's the next place we see the Babylonians mentioned.
2 Kings 17. You just want me to do one verse?
I may extend you out a little bit. We'll do that one to begin with.
The king of Assyria brought men from Babylon and from Cuthah and from Ava and from Hamath and Sepharvaim and settled them in the cities of Samaria in place of the sons of Israel. So they possessed Samaria and lived in its cities.
Okay. And verse 25, I'll give you another verse.
At the beginning of their living there, they did not fear the Lord. Therefore, the Lord sent lions among them, which killed some of them.
Okay. Now, this might give us some insight on why the woman at the well and Jesus, some of their dialogue that they had. The Jews have no dealings with the Samaritans, the woman at the well pointed out to Jesus. Well, look what they did. When the king of Assyria brought people from Babylon and placed them in the cities of Samaria. So these were Babylonians. And so you have Babylon right there, right next, right in the middle of the promised land, right next to Judah. So that is one reason that the Samaritans were so hated. And then going over to chapter 24, verse 13 and 14... Jill, I'll let you read those two verses.
2 Kings?
Yeah, 24, 13, and 14. And this just shows that the Babylonians eventually carried away.
And he carried out from there all the treasures of the house of the Lord and the treasures of the king's house. And he cut in pieces all the articles of gold which Solomon, king of Israel, had made in the temple of the Lord, as the Lord had said. Also, he carried into captivity all Jerusalem, all the captains and all the mighty men of valor, 10,000 captives and all the craftsmen and smiths. None remained except the poorest people of the land.
All right, so Babylon eventually takes Judah into captivity. Now, Babylon was really nice to the Jews, right? Nah. We read Psalm 137, and it showed how they would make them sing the Lord's song to take God's name in vain right in the middle of their captivity. And in Daniel 5, we see that they were forced to bow down to a statue that anybody that resisted God's law and wouldn't pray was killed. All kinds of terrible things the Babylonians did. But then we see that Babylon, as prophesied, is overtaken by the Medes. All right, Dana, if you look up for us Jeremiah 25:12. in Daniel 5, we saw that the king was really desecrating the vessels of God. And on that very night, the Medes destroyed Babylon. All right, Dinah.
Then it will be when 70 years are completed, I will punish the king of Babylon and that nation, declares the Lord, for their iniquity and the land of the
Chaldeans,
and I will make it an everlasting desolation.
All right, so here was a very powerful Babylon. And in one night, God destroys it and makes it a perpetual desolation. No more Babylon. That is it for Babylon. All right, turn to Revelation 18. Another reason I'm going to show you, you can't just be a literalist, take everything literally. First of all, back to Revelation 17, verse 5. And on the forehead, the name written, this is the forehead of the harlot. Mystery, Babylon the Great, the mother of harlots and the abominations of the earth. And then we read in 18, verse 2, and he cried, this is a mighty angel, cried mightily with a loud voice, saying, Babylon the Great is fallen, and has become a dwelling place of demons, a prison forever for every foul spirit, a cage for every unclean and hated bird. For all the nations have drunk of the wine of the wrath of her fornication. The kings of the earth have committed fornication with her, and the merchants of the earth have become rich through the abundance of her luxury. So Babylon's destroyed. So this couldn't be the real Babylon, the physical Babylon. I think it's obvious from the context that Jerusalem has become the new Babylon. And although that's not the popular view, most commentators think that's referring to Rome. But I think you have more problems with trying to make it Rome than you do Jerusalem. Turn back to Ezekiel 23. I'm not going to quite get through with what I wanted to. Ezekiel 23, we read in verse 11. Now, although her, all right, this is talking about Judah and the northern kingdom. The northern kingdom and the southern kingdom. And then beginning in verse 15, we see girded with belts around her waist, flowing turbans on her head, and all of them looking like captains, in the manner of the Babylonians of Chaldea, the land of her nativity. As soon as her eyes saw them, she lusted for them and sent messengers to them in Chaldea. Then the Babylonians came to her in the bed of love, and they defiled her with their immorality. And she was defiled by them and alienated herself from them and reveled in her harlotry and uncovered her nakedness. Then I alienated myself from her and alienated myself from her sister. The next four or five verses are the most graphic verses in the Bible. Read them for yourselves if you want to. But that's the reason why I believe that that has to be referring to God's people, that they had become Babylon, that they were harlots, a bunch of harlots, very odious to God. So we see that, at least in my opinion, and some commentators, although not all commentators, I hold that God now sees Jerusalem as Babylon. All right, I'm going to have to hold it there. We will finish up on Babylon next week, and we'll get at least through 15 and 16, and hopefully further than that. Anybody have any comments on anything that we covered today, Laura? However, the first two verses we see good news for God's people. This could be considered a preview of chapters 40 through 66. This is also shows the status of the Gentiles in the future. Servants and then converts. And then verses 3 through 23 is a prophecy of the fall of the kingdom of Babylon.
And then the last one.
Okay, pride. Okay. Problem here is the pride. Their pride.
The last one is the rest of the chapter concerns the coming what? I'm serious. Judgment.
Judgment, yeah. Mm-hmm. All right, any other comments? All right, if not, Bud, I'll have you close us in prayer today.
Heavenly Father.